Accession number 14972, Richard Atkinson, Reel 6.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 6. Do you recall the date or the time of the year that you moved from Rewsley down to the southwest?
No, not really. It was autumn, but I couldn't say for exact date. Actually, you weren't interested in dates, to be honest. You just day by day. Typical army, you play by ear.
You mentioned that you were getting reinforcements. Where were they coming from?
I think they must have been mostly come from the Durham area. Because we didn't seem to have any. Oh no, sorry, stand corrected. Manchester area, we got quite a few into the transport from the Manchester area.
Did you get anybody from Scotland? There's a number of Scots regiments involved.
No Scots regiments. They hadn't had a regiment. These fellows had just been called up, I think, indoctrinated in Northern Ireland, if I'm not mistaken, because they all talked about Hollywood barracks and things like that in Northern Ireland. And then they came to us, and of course, Joe Madison, the sergeant, was picking people for transport, and he was asking them, yes, you're transport. And that's sort of, the army way of this, yes, you, and he sounds good, we'll have him. And I think we finished up with quite a few people from the Manchester area, but they weren't in the regiment, they'd just been called up.
What was the transport situation? You'd lost an enormous amount of equipment.
The transport situation was nil. We had a few civilian vehicles that had been commandeered. I'll never forget it, because we had a Thetford. And we nicknamed the Killer, because you had to start with the handle. No self-starter. Civilian vehicle. And if you didn't get right, you should pull you down. And you could tell anyone who had any deal with it had a bruise on the brow. Anyone. But that it was just the captain quartermaster for Russians and stuff like that. There was no organised transport like there had been in France.
Was the equipment of the battalion in the same condition?
No, we're re-equipped with rifles and stuff, and as I say, they took us on the south coast, Lyme Regis, Bridport area, and you just manned the cliffs in case there's talk of invasion, and you just manned the cliffs and the beaches, the sort of shingles, and there was an RAF SE rescue station in Lyme Regis. And you had to lend a hand with that. That's another story. I think they gave me a searchlight in case there was, and it was one of these little things like a car headlamp, but it wouldn't have shown I've seen stronger torches. And if the Germans come, I think I had to shine this light in their eyes. That's how we were organised. That thing. We weren't organised, we were just paddling along, sort of stuff. We used to patrol the cliff tops, night and day.
Were you digging trenches and defences?
No. I don't think so. I think the companies just went down onto the beach, sort of lined it. Because there were high cliffs, and you just sort of looked down onto it. And then we just in a hollow, right way down and up. And transport was at a place called Green Acres, an old army man and a navy man. And it was a holiday camp, and we were in there. Like a miniature button thing.
So what were you doing during the day? The kind of typical things you were doing during 24 hours while you were down there?
Well, you'd spend 3 hours looking after this headlamp thing, killing time, or you would... you may have a duty to perform, or if there's transport, you may have to go and seek rations and things like that. Just odd stuff, as it come along. But, I mean, they had a fairground, the shows and that. Amongst us, that's the type of atmosphere it was. A bit for a couple of hundred yards, there was this, on the seafront, there was this merry-go-rounds and things like that. It was still going on. And it was us patrolling the coastline for Germans. Of course, there was no lights, I think, at night time. And he did guard duties. and the wild ponies used to come off the moors and things like that, you know, through the bracken. You could hear them chomping around at night time.
Had there been beach defences laid? And
no.
There were no mines or anything like that?
Not when we were there, there was no mines. That, I suppose that would come later, but we sort of put barbed wire across the thing. But I say there was a big RAF AC rescue on the mole. And if you're anywhere near, and there's a call came out for a pilot down, and you used to just run along and help throw the mooring ropes off and help them. And they used to go out, and if they were there, bring back the prisoner, but if it was German or anything like that, brought them in, and you just sort of helped them with the boat again. But they had a good station. Theirs was, you know, that China cups, and so you actually got on. I remember, there's a little story I'll tell you. One night, we're on guard, my turn, got the stick. That meant I was general dog's boy. I didn't do the sentence.
That's for the smartest man on guard.
Smartest man on guard. Well, none of us were very smart, but I had to be the one that was chosen. Answered the phone. You had to go and get the guard, so then answer the phone. And this call went, you know, in those days, you give your name, rank, and number, voice, and what were you before the war? You know, and all these things, and you get sick to the death of it. And then, no, me, you never tell the truth. I said, oh, I went to see on trawlers. Put them off, you see. The next thing I know, I was posted to the RAF rescue to help them. It's great. I had about 4 days there living in this, as I say, China place. Cup. Living like a lord. And the tumble had been still alive. I was back up the hill to the back of the regiment. I was only a mile away from the regiment, but I was back up the hill with them. But that was the strokes you got up to. It was a glorious life living amongst the RAF.
You mentioned them picking up German prisoners. Where were they coming from?
Well, if the plane was shut down, things like that. You see, they're out in the channel, picking up. They're like motor torpedo boats. They're very fast. You used to out, pick them up. If it was ours, or... We picked a body off the beach there. I never forget him. He's a Spitfire, Sergeant Silver. You know, the disc, and the RAF come collect them. He's in a shingle, because shingle beaches, the RAF come collect them on a truck and took them away. But he's an RAF fighter pilot who had been shut down over the channel or something.
Was there a lot of air activity while you were there?
Yes, quite a bit, because the Battle of Britain started. It was quite a bit. You still watch, you know, going on about, round about you.
Did the Germans get to bomb you at all, or drop
you? No, not there they didn't. We used to watch them going over and getting engaged and coming back and things like that. No, we never got bombed anything there. It's normal life. Used to go to Dorchester at night, and Bridport at night, for, you know, you sleep a truck on for to take you and bring you back.
How did the people respond to you?
Oh, they're all right, because it was all cider there, and we couldn't take it. We used to buy a cider and things like that. They weren't bad. They, you know, they couldn't understand Geordies and Devons, but...
Did you get invited to their homes?
Oh, no, there was never anything like that. You know, in the pubs would talk to you and things like that, but you're in the, I don't think anybody was ever invited to their homes.
There would be lots of other units around you.
No, just a 50 div. But you see, but then again, the service corps that we had that used to pick us up, they were on Glatzenbergen Street, which was miles away, scattered over a big area like that. But it was just the 50 div area.
How did you?
I never saw the 6th or the 8th. Where they were on the coast, I don't know. You never had any contact. For all you're in the 151 Brigade, you never had any contact. There must have been a left or right or something, but we never saw them.
Where were you accommodated?
In it was like a holiday camp. Well, there were chalets and bungalows, but because you just slept in the trucks. I don't know if they were used for officers or what, I don't know. But it was a place called Greenacres, and it was this commander or a colonel or something. It was his thing pre-war, which was like a miniature holiday camp, a Butland sort of style thing. Because I remember one of the vehicles knocked the gatepost down and there was murder on. We got our pioneers who was going to build it up again. With me being a bricklayer, I volunteered to help. And we built it up, but we made it wider. But to get the vehicles in and out, he made me pull it down and put it up exactly where it was originally. He's a military type of person, and he got his own way. We had to put it back exactly as it was, where it was. But we were in there. It was a sort of holiday camp thing. And transport was. I mean, I don't know where the companies was.
And you said that you were basically sleeping in the trucks. You didn't have any other shelter.
Well, there was chalets and that. I mean, by this time, I don't think we're getting the vehicles. I think they're just, you're sort of...
So you were sleeping in chalets?
I think it must have been because that's all that was there.
How were you being fed? Was the food good?
Oh, yes. Well, it was a normal army food. You know what we're... you know, it was... Yes, I mean, everybody turned their nose up at army food, but we were putting weight on a thing they got, so it must have been good.
Did you have any naffy or canteen which helped out?
I suppose we must have had, but I can't remember it, to be honest. We usually did have, because I must admit, the welfare for the DLIs was outstanding. They always come first above everything else.
Were the people in their usual homes? There wasn't any question of getting them away from the beach?
No, they just lived normally. You just intermingled with the cafes, and because you didn't have money to go into cafes, but there was food rationing by this time. So, but there was there, you know. And, oh, there must have been enough of you, because you used to go for your tea every morning. You know, you broke for tea at 10 o'clock, a cup of tea and a wad. So there must have been enough of you somewhere. There usually was, and there must have been one there.
At what point did you start getting new equipment?
Now, where do we move to from there? I think we moved to Tiverton from there, and we started to get organised then in Tiverton. That was in Devon. It was a big place. Yes, we had transport there because we were going to the river to wash the vehicles and clean them. So we must have been equipped after we come off the coast at Lyme Regis back to that area, which is not far back, but that's where we must have been re-equipped.
And what date would you
move? Well, now you're talking the back end of the year, back end of 40, beginning of 41. You're re-equipped by this time.
Did you get any time for leisure activities, sport?
Oh, yes. I mean, you still finish your normal day at 4 o'clock, unless you're on guard duty and things like that. And the sport was still going, you know, in amongst the regiments and whatnot, and amongst yourselves. Basketball, handball, hockey was a great thing. Football, of course.
Did you get any opportunity to play against civilian teams?
No. There was never anything like that. I wasn't a football man, but that was an outstanding thing to get on the divisional team. I presume they would play, because by this time there's quite a few sportsmen coming into the regiment. Well, they were coming in as PT men, cricketers and things like that, and professional footballers. They were coming in as PT instructors. And that's how organised they were getting. You had your own PT instructor with you.
Did you get involved with the local Home Guard in any training?
Yes. It was a farce, what do you think? You used to go on when you was not, you're attacking this place and there's no way there. And you're going up a street, the fellow would come out and say, you're dead. He'd been sitting getting his dinner, watching past the window, but he's a Home Guard. And of course, the umpire said, well, you should have been on your guard. You should have been, no, that's the way they're going to work and that's the way it is. But yes, you got involved with things like that. You used to say, stupid at the time, but that's the way it was. Yeah, quite a few manoeuvres and exercises like that with them. Because by this time you're going onto the moors and doing big exercises, you know, divisional exercises. And it was winter because and it was still on that canvas, and I think there was a couple of cases of exposure and whatnot.
This is when you moved to Tiverton and the hinterland.
Yeah, and you're going on to Exmoor and those places, that way. So, yes. Because I remember there was a prisoner escaped from Dartmoor and there was murder on. He had gotten off the moor somewhere and I don't know yet to this day how he did it, but he got off. And we couldn't survive. We were struggling to survive, and they said, there's a prisoner, you can do it. But we did quite a few exercises on the moor.
How did you feel the way things were going now? Did you feel you were coming together more as a combined unit?
Oh, we were a regiment by this time. You know, you're back to the usual bull marching up the the dining room for your breakfast and your dinner. Thing they got ceremonial guard, you know, the quarter guard was mounting and things like that. Oh, you're back as a regiment again. And the transport was back as it was, you know, doing it, collecting this and taking this and doing that. Oh, it was all back, and the vehicles was inspected every day and pulled up for parades and whatnot.
Where were you living in the Tiverton area?
Well, we were in a church hall. There's about 8 drivers in a church hall. There, because it was a big factory there in Tiverton, I think the only one that made parachutes. And our laundry used to be collected once a week and taken down to the factory for washing, brought back. We all turned out lousy. We finished it over with lice. So it was a delousing parade in this parachute factory. There we were, lined up, strip off, not a thing, put your stuff in these big steel drums, all steamed, and they come out the other end like a load of dishcloths. You put them back on, and the girls in the factory were standing watching the nude, waiting for your stuff to come out the other end. And we said, well, we've got the lights in here, we might as well give it back to them, but that's what. But we were allowed, and we walked around the street for days, they all creased up uniforms and whatnot. They wouldn't give us any, well, we had no others. And you couldn't get the creases out because they'd either gone through these big steam things, like decontamination chambers. See, there again, when I was at jail at the time, I was on the clean clothes. Some another transport driver was on the dirty clothes. He, when they went in these things, he had the tied up in bundles and put into his, and he drove them to these contamination chambers. He went back for more. I was a clean vehicle, so I picked the clean ones up and brought the clean ones back. That's how they're getting organised, sort of things like that.
How did you know you were getting your uniform back after they'd gone in?
Well, you just recognise it in a way.
Was it marked in any way?
Well, all your was marked from day one. You had your number on it from day one, where your last 4 numbers.
And presumably that didn't wash out so easily.
No, that was... It was put on, you put on yourself. That was the first thing it told you. You had to mark all your stuff. And as soon as you got it, you automatically marked it. Whenever you issued with anything, you marked your last 4. It was in a bundle and you looked and you found 44439. That's right.
Were the people of Tiverton and that area any different from the way that people treat you on the coast?
No. They're pleasant, nice to you. I mean, they weren't awkward, but just pleasant, let's put it that way. I mean, you weren't invited, well, maybe some was, but the majority, I don't think the majority was in. We just stuck amongst ourselves, you know, our nuffies and the clubs, and we run our own dances. We had had its own dance band and everything. Yeah.
Where did you get the girls from for the dances? Where were they coming from?
Well, they were civilians. If there's any ATS
invited
there. Oh yes, they could just come in normally if they ATS anything like that. Because you just had to buy a ticket at the door and you come in.
Was this an opportunity to get a girlfriend in the area?
Oh yes, there was fellas that could do that. There was fellas that could track women. You know, when you went anywhere, there's always, you know, you knew the gigolo, so we call them gigolo, that could always get a girl, and they always had a girl. If there's one girl in the village, he would, you know, be walking out with her and things like that. They're usually good dancers and things like that, or nice dog, mustache, or something like that. But they could always do it.
Was there any problems between the civilians and the troops? No fights, anything?
Oh, no. I don't think the Durhams ever had any fights anywhere. I don't think we fought with other regiments even. You know, when we went anywhere, it was sort of... No, I can never... I mean, you had your red caps and your... regimental police and that. I mean, you used to get put in a charge and you had on the side of your head and stuff like that. But there was never any trouble with... Well, there was never any other regiments here, to be honest. You know, that was... The 9th had that thing and that was it.
Who were your officers at this time? You'd lost quite a number.
Well, my officer was a fellow called Sparks. Ned Sparks. Well, all officers got nicknames. And he was Ned Sparks after the comedian on the television, which he was a comedian. You know, and I don't mean that respectfully. I mean disrespectfully. He's a ranker. He come up. I don't know who my MTO was in France because I was company. Well, attached to company. Never saw him. Couldn't tell you who he was. Never saw him. And I think we had Ned Sparks by this time.
What was he like?
Honestly? I won't be disrespectful. He was tolerable. You could tolerate him.
Was he harsh with you or
no,
inefficient or what?
Opposite him, he's inefficient.
Had he no transport experience? Is that was it his problem?
Well, his father owned a pub on the 3 mile out on the way out to Newcastle beside Gosforth Park. I don't know what he was, but he. I mean, yeah, actually, he didn't have much connection with officers. I mean, you only saw them on parade or when they come to speak to you. You weren't allowed to speak to them. You had to see a sergeant if you wanted to speak to him. You didn't have much connection with them. The sergeants did. But, you didn't have any. He wasn't a man that you'd go to for anything, to be honest. I don't think you'd get a sensible answer out of him if you did. I mean, we had some good officers, but he was.
Was this intellect, or was he a drinking man, or was this his problem?
Well, I think all officers had a drink, but I don't know about his drinking habits, but it was just his intellect. I mean, we weren't all that brilliant, but I mean, he didn't seem to gel with you, let's put it that way. He was there.
What about NCOs then?
Oh, the NCOs was out of this world. I mean, I think only had one sergeant that I had a truck with, and we just didn't speak to each other. But the majority of NCOs was. See, I mean, a sergeant wasn't supposed to, so was less than a sergeant, a corporal was a corporal, and a private was a private. But in the same with all the DLIs, that went by the board. You all went out together. And if you're going somewhere and they said, oh, the sergeant's messy, and I say, well, I'm a private. Yeah, and somebody give you 3 stripes, you pin them on and go in with them as if you're a sergeant. Or if you're going somewhere, they'll take the stripes off and go with you. That was the way it was with the NCOs. And it wasn't supposed to work, but it did work. You know, you're supposed to respect them and that, but it worked. You know, I mean, they'll come warn you, see, big inspection, you better get so-and-so done. They wouldn't just try and catch out. They'd come that way with you. Hey, you know, you better get that done for this weekend, it's so-and-so on, or something like that.
At this time, who were your NCOs that you were under?
Well, I was under the Madisons, and fella, and Ellison. You were in his room with me in Lille. But, yes, he was Madison and Ellison. Quite a few. You know, you can't remember all their names, but.
And these were men you respected?
Oh, yes, yes. You could talk to them, they would talk to you. Like fathers, to be honest. They looked after you, you know. And they wouldn't put you on a charge for the sake of a charge. Hey, you know, come on, let's have a little bit. Pull your socks up and think they got. But that's the atmosphere it was. It was still a territorial battalion, but all we got all these strangers in. And he automatically became Geordies. It was one of those things.
Had you any particular close friendships amongst the men that you were working with?
Yes, yes. Well, the Manchester fellows especially, there was a fellow called Mountfield, Cooper, Nicklin, and Haskins. We seemed to, you know, just be together all the time.
What
especially
were they like?
Mountfield and me.
What were they like?
Well, they became Geordies. That's the only way I can put it. They were just all seemed to come together. It was, you looked after each other, helped each other, did what you could for each other.
Amongst those people that you were friends with, were there any personalities or characters which
stood
out?
Harry Cooper, he was a weaver, something in the factory, you know, the clothing factory here was. And if you were with him in a vehicle, sometimes you went out, you know, as a second man, something. And you'd be going down the road, and it was dark, in those days, the white line, cut out. He used to say to Harry, you're on the white line again. That's my half of the road, and I'm going to have it. And he wouldn't move over, and the other transport was clipping you by inches on his side, but you're still cringing. And that was his fad. He was going to have his half of the road, reason or none, come hell or high water, that white line was his as much as the other fellas. And he used to be on the edge of your seat, ready to bail out. half the time. Little tricks like that. Now, Mountfield was just the opposite. He used to say to you, "Do you fancy driving, Dick?" "Well, I'm not fussy." "Go on, I'll have a rest, I'll have a sleep." It was just the opposite. Things like that.
Was there anyone who stood out as not being particularly nice, other than the officer that you mentioned?
Oh, I just had a fellow, well, as I say, Sergeant Tug Wilson from Bishopoke, not Spennymoor. So I don't know, it was that area, Durham. I couldn't tell you. Didn't I? He wasn't there. He had his little clique round him. And they tried to be, they were all nasty to you. If you didn't fit in with their ways, they didn't have no use for you, and you didn't have no, but they were sort of isolated. There's only about four of them, and they, you're lucky if you happen to be in the same billet, the same thing they got. But you just ignored them. You know, you come up with snide remarks, you know, about your breath and stuff like that. Maybe the fella couldn't get toothpaste to clean his teeth, something like that. You know, he had to have that snide remark about him. That's the type of man. But he was the only one I ever know that was like that. And we suddenly lost him. I don't know where he disappeared to. But he didn't go abroad with us, not to Egypt.
And he turned out to be universally disliked.
I think so, yes. Yeah, you know, even now you say, "Oh, Tug Wilson, oh. Oh." You know, so I think it must have been universal.
And you at this time were with Headquarter Company?
Headquarter Company this time.
And doing the task that yes. Company lays down.
Well, you see, by this time you're getting, like, let's say, battle-wise, sort of style. You learn the tricks, which way to get into, like, see the QM stores, getting with that. Then, you know, you learn all these little quirks where you're better off than a platoon driver. And, well, you're looking after yourself. You're making sure you had a good job and you're keeping your head down.
So as Headquarter Company, you just were as headquarters,
yes.
at everybody's beck and
yes.
call.
You see, you could be the Headquarter Company. Transport there was mostly QM stores, things like that. But you're in connection with the carrier platoon and the mortar platoon and stuff like that. So you might have to go to the carriers and do something with them, like supply them with petrol or something like that. You know, things like that. Or, you see, but I was mostly connected with rations. I used to go and draw rations from divisional thing with the sergeant quartermaster, bring them back, and he used to split them into companies, and maybe they should deliver them to the companies, or they would come to us to collect them. But that was your duties, things like that. And then as time went on, you see, I finished up driving Plod, the captain quartermaster, which was better still. You didn't have no run the boat. Yeah, just at his beck and call, but it was good.
What was his name?
He was Captain Love, but he went by nothing else but Plod.
Captain Love?
Captain Love. He was Plod, and Plod it was. He was like a big farmer, and that's how he got the name of Plod. And they, I mean, he didn't dare use it. He was a smashing officer. The regiment came first, without a doubt. But I think he was an ex-regular or a regular. But you're saying anyway now, Plod, they know exactly who you're talking about.
So Headquarter Company Transport, we've mentioned the fact that there were trucks for supplies.
They're mostly three tonners, but you had all these other little things like the CEO's staff car and stuff like that. That was all Headquarters Transport. So the CEO's driver was with you, Headquarter Company.
Were there any specialised vehicles in the Headquarter Company?
Well, the carriers. And when we... By this time, we're getting organised with the anti-tank, which we had Lloyd carriers, and then they got Lloyd vehicles. They had the Lloyd carriers, it was like a tank thing, but then they got the Lloyd's vehicles, where they were trucks, Lloyd carriers. So we were beginning to get specialised vehicles. Oh, and they were getting vehicles for anti-aircraft, where they could mount a Bren gun fitting and things like that on the back.
How was water transported?
We had a water cart. And one water cart, and he was responsible for the battalion water. He used to go and draw that. You know, so many gallons, I forget now, maybe 550 gallons, something like that. He used to draw it, and there's a row of taps along the back, and the fellas just come for the water bottles. He was a Jew boy, he used to look after that, a fellow called Mickey Harris. And I bumped him in London once after the war.
But refuse that you must have amassed in your billet area, in your camp area, how was that dealt with?
Oh, well, you had sentry corporals, you had sentry men. I'll not give you the hour name for them, but you had sentry men, and they were responsible for latrines, cleaning up, making sure the area, because you had to clean the area up, and when you left, I mean, but it was always inspected. You never left a dirty area, and you had your sanitary men and sanitary corporal, and they were responsible for toilets and the swill from cuckoos, which is usually organised for civilians in England, but a collect no for pig farms. It was organised by, but they were responsible for that. You had your sanitary.